are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
February 20th, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a nice day out here.
It is, and you enjoyed as much of it as you possibly could before joining us in here.
You know, if I didn't have so many agents calling me about some of our guests, it would be,
I have agents calling me too, but they're FBI agents. You and I lead different lives.
We do. Well, we should probably acknowledge our sponsors before we go any further.
All right.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Our guests today, three diverse performers. I just dated myself, if you remember
commercial. And that's hard to do, isn't it?
Well, it is, but at least
especially
I'm not going blind. Lady, before with the thing, I said...
Oh,
no.
We got a drummer in here.
Three diverse performers, two who just sang for their lives in the 8th annual LA's Next Great Stage Star Musical Theater Competition at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal in NoHo.
And the other, a veteran Broadway television and film actress who is starring in a new self-penned play titled Giving Up is Hard to Do, based on her fascinating life experiences, now on stage at the Santa Monica Playhouse. But before we talk to our guest, Paul, let me ask you. How was your week?
Michael, you know how we like to do like public service announcements here. Well, I have something that I think will truly benefit the public.
Really?
And it's just a personal experience, so I don't know if it will benefit everybody. But I just want to share something.
Okay.
Say you're in the shower. And
which
you
I was
leap
recently.
Out of the shower, and in an effort to entertain your wife, you leap out of the shower and you say, guess who's sexy? Okay, say one were to do that. I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying, say one were to do that. If one were to do that, note to self, make sure your wife's not on a conference call when you do it. So just, I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying if it benefits any of our listeners, that's what we're here for.
Why do I have a feeling that it did happen?
All I'm saying is that I'm very, very happy it was not a Skype session. We'll leave it at that. How was your week, Michael?
It was good. You know, I mean, it was great. We're here today to acknowledge two of the contestants in LA's Next Great Stage Star after a six-week very intense competition that came to fruition on February 16th, and with a beautiful winner emerging and some wonderful contestants coming up, rising to the top out of the 20. So it was, we always are sorry to see this leave because these 20 contestants kind of become our extended family for a couple of months, and we all get quite close.
Well, really, it's like you're doing a show together.
Exactly.
It's like doing a play, that camaraderie that you
get. Yes, it is.
Which is odd, because I did a show with Annie here.
Yes.
I can't stand this one. So what are the odds of that happening?
What kind of a thing is that?
I'm joking, of course.
That's my charm. That's my charm.
My I'm sorry.
But thank you for asking. No, I mean, it's we move on to and looking forward to next year's production of the same. It was our 8th anniversary year. So.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And all these people who've done it, gone off to do Broadway debuts.
Well,
and,
as you'll hear in our intro, I'm going to talk about that a little bit to our winner who's on standby.
Actually, we have her on. You want to give her intro?
Absolutely.
I'll contact her telephonically.
All right. Okay. Please do so. So, ladies and gentlemen, joining us by telephone today, our first guest hails from Northern California and is a senior at the University of Southern California, where she is majoring in theater with a minor in musical theater. On January 5th, she began competing weekly in the 8th annual edition of LA's Next Great Stage Star, as I just mentioned, the only musical theater competition of its kind designed to launch professional careers, and that it has done successfully since 2007, with 8 of its contestants having already made their Broadway debuts, while others have since starred off-Broadway in national tours and extended runs of Broadway shows in Las Vegas or professional regional musical theater throughout the country. Please welcome our first guest, who just last week claimed the title of LA's Next Great Stage Star 2014, the beautiful, uber-talented, and delightfully charming Jennifer Kran.
Jennifer!
Hello?
She's Jennifer. There, and she's uber talented.
Hi.
Did you know? Did you Did you know you were uber talented, Jennifer?
You know, I thought I may have a couple things going for me, but I didn't know I was uber talented by any means.
That's the ultimate. You know that, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, thank you. Being that it's just a few days since we all parted ways and saw one another, and you've resumed your full-time schedule at USC, and thank you for being available today to speak with us over the telephone, at least. We wanted you in the studio, but I understand one of your professors just would not let you go, right?
Nope. Full-time student still.
Wow. Travis is smiling. I think he knows what that's like here. So listen, Jennifer, tell us, just give us a little kind of highlight of information from your perspective of what it was like for you to go through this competition. You know, think back to when you were auditioning and that whole process and coming into the competition, meeting your fellow contestants, and kind of as everybody does, you size each other up. You could get to know each other personally, and then you start seeing what their wares are that they're bringing to the stage. What was that journey like for you?
You know, from the beginning, I knew it was going to be a super talented group. I knew a lot of USC people who were auditioning for the competition to begin with, and I questioned if I was even going to get into it just because I knew so much of the talent. And then I got the phone call that I was going to be competing, and I was beyond excited. It was my first day of Christmas break, and I was just driving home that day. So I spent probably 6 hours just thinking of this competition and what it meant to me and, you know, how much I'd wanted this. And then we got to the orientation, and I got to meet all the fellow contestants, and everyone was so supportive and so sweet, and we didn't get to hear each other sing until the first week, and at that point, I was just like, wow, I'm just lucky to be here at this point, just because the talent level was through the roof, and every week, people brought in new material, and everyone was always on their A game, and hearing the critiques back from the judges, it felt like a lot of the time, they were critiques that were so helpful, but then I also saw the performances and was like, wow, these people have so much going for them already. I would be lucky to be in the top five. And so that was kind of my goal, was to be, I was like, I would be lucky if I got into the top five. And then to have won the competition was beyond my expectations, but I had learned so much from my peers and so much from the judges that came in every week. It was so nice to get, you know, a new panel every week, a new panel of industry professionals who really knew what they were talking about. So I just learned so much, and I'm so grateful for the experience beyond the win.
And Jennifer, you come from a very musical family, right? Your siblings are performers as well. Your aunt sang with the San Francisco Symphony. You have a lot of
Yes.
Wow, that's now what is that like going home? I mean, do you find that they're more understanding, or is it difficult when you have so many artists under one roof?
No, you know, it's really fun, actually. Because we all kind of do different things. My aunt sings with the church choir at home, and so every year we get to go up and sing with her at Christmas, which is a lot of fun, and she sings at the San Francisco Symphony. And then my cousin goes to Northwestern, and she's an opera major. So we both started off doing musical theater, but she took a different route, and she's at Northwestern, which is one of the most prestigious places to study opera in the country.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really proud of her. And then my younger cousin is just starting to go through her college application. She wants to be in musical theater too. And yeah, we're just a musical family, but everybody kind of has their own path, and we're all really supportive, and, you know, we bounce things off of each other. So it's actually really nice. It's not competitive. It's really fun. It's a nice place to be. It's a nice place to practice.
You know, it was very similar in my family, except we're all plumbers. So it's a little different, but quite the same.
Yeah, not quite the same.
I gotta have my rib shot close.
There you go.
Oh, man. Jennifer, what's next for you? Now that, this competition is all encompassing. Obviously you're a student, you have that to deal with, but any immediate hopes or dreams? Anything's on the horizon for you?
Well, I'm hoping to get an agent. I have a couple of meetings set up for next week, so I'm hoping that those work out well for me. And then from there, I just kind of hope that I can, you know, create a path with them. I kind of have my own ideas of what I want to do. Musical theater is definitely at the forefront, but I am in Los Angeles, so it'd be nice to explore some other things, but musical theater for sure, just not sure where exactly yet. I got to get that diploma first, and then I can figure it out.
Oh.
Well, I don't think you're going to have any problem with that, Jennifer, and especially with musical theater and the other things that are out there for you in television and film and commercials. You're a very, commercial type of young lady. You're very beautiful and you're very charming, and I'm not saying this just because we're talking to you on the radio.
And uber talented, don't
forget. And uber talented, uber. Yes. Let's not forget the uber.
Yes.
But, this is something that you all we're such a unique group of such diverse talents up on that stage. And as you said earlier, what these industry professionals, 24 of them actually came through the competition, and 18 judged the finale alone.
Wow.
And every week, with the exception of the finale, because it was a longer presentation, you're right, they gave you very candid remarks, and the kind of remarks that you don't hear from them when you are in a real-life audition setting, when you're going in for to sing 16 bars of a song, and they say thank you. You walk out the door. You don't know whether or not you did well. You think you did, but you're really not sure if you did by their standards. And what were those, especially if you don't book the job? So in this setting, didn't you – I know you said this, but I mean – I used to be a performer, so I really wanted that information. And when you got that information, all of you were in a position of accepting this, digesting it, making it work for you, putting it in the material you were going to get back the following week. And I think that, you evidently, by all of the results of that came out of the finale, you were one of the people that excelled at doing that. So congratulations to you for being kind of a sponge, if you will, and taking that 6 weeks and making it all turn around and work for something that is very important for your future.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jennifer mentioned something early on, which I think is the high watermark of this competition. And you said it yourself. So, I mean, they're frank and they're honest, but it's all about supporting and encouraging.
Very much.
There's no victimizing. There's nothing like it is on some of the TV talent shows or anything like
right.
that. And I think that's the most, when I've seen it a couple of times, I think that's the most appealing thing for me.
Well, thank you. That's yeah. We strive to mm-hmm. reach that.
Jennifer, thank you so much. We're going to switch to I don't want to say co-star, but someone who shared the spotlight with you, and we'll chat with him and we'll let you get back to class. Is that all right?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
Great.
We expect big things from you, Jennifer, so we know that we will not be disappointed on that front. Thank you so much again, as Paul said, for taking time out of your busy school day. And congratulations from all of us here at State of the Arts and LA Talk Radio and all of everybody connected with the competition. You are indeed a winner.
Thank you, Michael. All thank right. you, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Nice meeting
Have
you, Jennifer.
Have a great day.
Bye, Jennifer.
Bye.
Bye.
She's very sweet.
Yes,
she is. She is very sweet. Our next guest shared the spotlight with the uber-talented Jennifer Kranz at LA's Next Great Stage Show this year, and did so by becoming the first ever eliminated contestant saved by what was a panel of 18 of LA's most distinguished theater professionals at the Stage Star finale on February 16th, just a couple days ago. A graduate from the opposing campus of UCLA, is it?
Yes,
he
yes.
He too hails mm-hmm. from Northern California, and while most of his work has been in theater, he's also been pursuing a career in film and television, also a playwright. His work has been performed at the Notre Dame de Namur,
yes.
Labor Day. You like that? Like the way I did that? Michael always gives me those things to pronounce. In San Francisco, the Strawberry One Act Festival and Alchemical Theater Laboratory in New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
Please welcome first runner-up in LA's Next Great Stage Star 2014, Travis Leland. As soon as I get... Welcome, buddy.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Yes, indeed.
Travis, pleasure having you on. I always ask people this in these competition shows because I don't know if this ever happened to you, Annie, because mm-hmm. you've performed... as not, a great deal as I have. But I have a lot of performance anxiety. And you did a one-person show. Mm-hmm. I've done a one-person
right.
show. And in this sort of climate where it's all about you for that period of time, how do you deal with the nerves?
I mean,
aside from scotch.
Right, right.
Which we discussed before
I kept
the show,
that with me in the back of the house and, sat and watched everyone else. There was a point, I think, before I moved to Los Angeles where I didn't get as nervous as I used to. And I sort of acknowledged that. And when I would go into auditions, I had more fun than anything. I didn't really get too nervous. And I think that I sort of kept that with me for as long as I have been out here doing this. And I can honestly say I was never too nervous for this competition because it was so much fun for me. You know, I was, of course, I was nervous in preparation for it, but the day of, show up, there's nothing else you can do. You've done all the work. Right. You've learned the music. You've gone over it 1,000 times. And now it's just time to have fun.
You know, you're actually stating something that is in all of the anxiety books and everything, and it's just about rechanneling energy and turning nerves into excitement. Just making it excitement rather than fear, you know. And I think that that's it's a good place to be as young as you are and as early in your career, because it's a, you know, it snuck up on me just mid-30s.
Yeah.
I was fine until like my mid-30s, and then it just hit me like a
But there's always, they say, there's always, because I too have, you know, been there, done that, and still have it to some degree, but it's under a big control. But
well, you're medicated, but
But they always say that there's something that is suppressed psychologically that is triggering all of this to begin with, and that's what you have to find out, eventually what you have to find out.
What's under the surface.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and once you do, I think you can release it. I know that for me, when I was going through that kind of heavy-duty experience, the one thing that, and I guess it's in line of what we're talking about, that I read in a book, it said what you should say to yourself was, I know you, you know, talking to anxiety. I know you. Hey, come on in. I've got total control. You're coming in at my invitation.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Is that I think the big mistake that people make is that they try to suppress it.
Yeah,
and that's the worst thing you can do, because that's throwing gasoline on the fire. You just got to let it wash over you. Did you ever have any nervous performance anxiety? Any?
Yes, when I was younger. And also as a character woman, as a very young woman, I was doing wonderful, great roles in the third act. Mm-hmm. Of these classic plays. I was so scared by the time I... But you know what the difference is? I found that as I got older and I began to get to really kind of gobble larger roles, when you have a lot to think about, when you have a... You have to count on yourself to do an enormous amount of work, kind of step by step, by moment by moment. You have to begin. And in the beginning, you just have to let it all go because you have so much to think about.
Right. Yeah.
You're responsible for so much. I found with bigger roles, I didn't get nervous anymore.
Right, yeah, because you can't, it's true. You can't not, it's like don't think of a pink elephant.
Right.
You can't not think of something, but you can displace your thoughts with something else. And that's huge.
And another point too, one thing I always would focus on is the first moment. If the first moment's not there.
Yep.
It's a train wreck, you know, and I think that's all you can prepare for. You can't prepare for the high note at the end of the song or the tricky, you know, interlude in the middle or whatever kind of staging choreography you have. It's just the first verse, the first line.
Jerry Seinfeld calls that pulling the mic out clean. That's what he says. pulling the mic off the mic stand and moving forward. He says that's what that moment is.
Wow.
He goes, if I can pull the mic out clean, I can do the hour.
Right.
And that's just, I've always found
that interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, in Travis's case and all of the other contestants, you know, they were challenged musically, categorically, every single week. So they had
challenged.
They had to learn a piece of music from a given category that we created. So maybe one week it was completely new music that was emerging from musical theater that was currently in workshop form, but it had not necessarily been presented to the public. Occasionally, some of the pieces that we put in that particular week had gone up and given it had some sort of a very brief run. But
do you get really exotic with it, or is it just like angry Asian throat singers or anything?
No. It's all, you know, coming from songwriters who are trying to make a name for themselves in musical theaters. So.
Oh, that's right. I remember because I saw your program that week.
Exactly. Yeah. And another week would be from you know, more classical composers like Irving Berlin and Cole Porter and Harold Arlen and Gershwin. And
Travis, where do your tastes lie given all the different things you were challenged with?
My tastes lie in new works. I absolutely love new works. Okay. I wasn't crazy about the song I was assigned, but...
interesting, because we have the composer right here.
Hey, how you doing?
He's turned very red.
It's the Scotch.
You never know. I love new works because you can you can take it anywhere, you know, and there's really no right or wrong way to do it. Yeah. And I wouldn't say that was my favorite week, but I would say that is where my interests lie in terms of musical theater.
And you're not going up against someone's preconception.
Exactly,
of
how that
the songs
too. That
to
too.
Be delivered.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, so let's talk about that. You said you didn't connect with a song necessarily that was given to you, or you didn't. It wasn't your favorite thing.
It wasn't my favorite thing.
Right.
But you
had to make it work for you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I feel like I connected with it because it was a very successful week for me.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
There were definitely a lot of good comments about it. And it was a fun song. End of the day, it turned out to be a really fun song.
So would you keep that in your book and do it again?
As a character piece? Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called when you have a certain number, you have a book? Is that what you say, keep it in your book? I just don't know the terminology.
Every musical performer would have a book. Okay. You know, coming into this competition, they have books because they're learning in school and other. You know, Travis has graduated from school. Jennifer has not. She's still there studying.
Right.
So the building of the book is the big thing with a musical theater performer.
Okay, so it's like it's your resume.
It's when you go into an audition. If you go in saying, you know, you're going in based on whatever you're going in for, and you're going to sing an appropriate song that's right for that particular character in your mind. And the second you open the book or you start to sing that, they can stop you and say, what else do you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have to be, that book could be, you know, 100 pieces of music in there. You have to know every single piece of music there.
Wow.
So if you start reading off, what else do you have? Oh, I have this, I have that. No. And you finally land somewhere, you got to be able to sing that.
Yeah. It sounds to me like that world that you're talking about that you have to mentally occupy, is what prepares you for, I mean, exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, to be in
especially
audition.
In a because, scenario like that.
Yeah, because no acting audition, no non-musical audition is going to be like, you know what, do the Henry V monologue.
Well, I've actually heard of auditions going like that.
Where they just switch it.
Where they just, or in addition to the two monologues you prepared, can you do something else? Can you do something funny? Can you do something like Shakespeare?
I always love getting that question after I've done a comedic monologue. Now, could you try something funny? Ouch. Oh, it's a tough room.
Well, you certainly lived up to all of the challenges week by week. But I think that for the first time, Paul, as you read in his intro, we've never had a situation where we've given the judges an option to save a contestant, meaning that regardless of how he scored, because the first 5 weeks of those scores are what determines who goes into the top five. And those top five were announced based on the scores created by the audience every single week, as they did have a say-so in this competition, as well as the judges. Oh. And then that top five, we had to then go to the judges, are you exercising this option? And they confer and they put a vote. It has to be by majority. And the vote came back for you. And it was a very exciting moment, actually, for all of us. I'd never experienced it before. The audience never had. None of us ever had. And, you know, not knowing what his standing was, it could have been anybody. That's what we make it open to everyone.
And that will be something that will be a constant from now on?
Yes, absolutely.
And what brought that on, Michael? Why was that element introduced?
You know, because we felt...
I mean, aside from the checks from Travis that he was getting... Aside from the obvious.
And his family.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, I have something for you. I'll talk to you after the show. But go ahead.
You know, it's because we're very... we put people through this competition for various reasons. Certainly talent is one of the most important things. But it's not necessarily... You've got to be the greatest singer in the world. It's not about that. You've got to be a good package. You've got to bring to the table something that makes sense on the receiving end of this. So an amazing, amazing singer versus someone who sings very well, you're talking about two different things.
Right.
But it's
right.
not about that. It's about everything else. It's about the acting part of it, what you bring to the table in that, understanding the lyrics, singing the song it was meant to be sung the way the composer wanted it to be sung, you know, and you don't really know what that answer is, if it's a standalone song or if it's coming from a musical theater show, then you have some idea, certainly from the character, but you can also pull that over into your own life and make it about you, make it personal, make it based on something you've gone through.
Right.
So we had so many people that lived up to those standards that to narrow it down and say whoever is in sixth place, for example, that wasn't really what was important to us. It was giving the opportunity to the 15 other people that had just been eliminated for the very first time and seeing if the judges felt somebody was worthy.
Oh, so it happened immediately after the elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Boy,
yeah.
That's an emotional roller coaster to go.
Yeah, it was a little crazy.
Yeah.
A little crazy, yeah.
But at least it worked out to your benefit.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it sounds like the relation, what you were talking about earlier, even if people get eliminated, it sounds like the overall feeling of everyone who's there is just one of growth and moving forward.
Absolutely.
There's no animosity.
No.
There's no-
absolutely, absolutely. And I think, there are definitely a lot of the people that were in the competition who are now, I can call them friends, deserve to be up there just as much as I did.
Oh.
Being the one that was saved.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the interesting thing is once that save happened and there was a break of a few minutes just to let the contestants then compose themselves, because they all then, all of the scores they've accumulated, even Travis's, everybody's scores were completely discarded, so that final sing-off between those six people was on equal footing.
It
was all about that moment in time. And that changed the dynamics, perhaps, of how they walked onto the stage as the top five. Wow. And the
no laurels. To be
safe.
Yeah. No
exactly.
laurels.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to rest on.
Exactly.
You know, I was going to do the Stage Star competition this year, Michael, but I had a personal conflict.
What was that, Paul?
I can't sing or dance.
Oh.
So, anyway, we have an arts calendar.
I'll vouch for that.
We have an arts calendar we're going to do, and then we're going to get back to this. So you mind if I kick it off,
please,
Michael?
Please do.
Six young people in the throes of puberty, overseen by grown-up who barely manage to escape childhood themselves, learn that winning isn't everything and that losing doesn't necessarily make you a loser. The 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee chronicles the overachievers' angst of six precocious adolescents. The show's Tony Award-winning creative team has created the unlikeliest of hit musicals about the unlikeliest of heroes, a quirky yet charming cast of outsiders for whom a spelling bee is the one place where they can stand out and fit in at the same time. Directed by Kristen Towers Rolls, a great friend of State
yes,
of the
indeed.
Arts, been here a couple of times, and presented by Kirik Productions, a new producing entity in Los Angeles. Spelling Bee is on stage now through March 1st at the historic El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. For tickets, 818-508-4200 or visit elportaltheater.com. Theater is the R-E spelling.
Indeed, and 3D Theatricals, ladies and gentlemen, the critically acclaimed production, or presenting the critically acclaimed production of Mel Brooks' The Producers, which opens tomorrow, Friday, February 21st, at the beautiful Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, and will continue there through March 2nd. Based on the hit 1968 film of the same name, this Mel Brooks masterpiece chronicles the hilarious adventures of washed-up Broadway producer Max Bialystock and his mild-mannered accountant Leo Bloom as they scheme to get rich quick by producing Springtime for Hitler, the most notorious flop in the history of show business. What they don't know is that after all their hard work, the musical ends up being a smash hit. It's a comic tour de force that spoofs the big old-fashioned Broadway musical while paying tribute to it at the same time. So don't miss this truly extravagant production with a top-notch all-star Broadway cast. And for tickets, call 714-589-2770, extension 1, or visit 3DTshows.com.
I'm not going to miss it. I'm going on Sunday.
You are.
It's my mother and my brother in town. And my mother, I want to see a play while I'm there. I want to see you do the radio thing. You can get tickets. Get me in. Additionally, this weekend, if you loved her on the hit TV series Will and Grace, you'll love her even more live on stage at Santa Monica's stunning Broad Theater. She's abroad at the Broad.
Abroad at the Broad.
One evening only, Saturday, February 22nd at either 5 or 8 p.m. Two shows. Get your tickets now for two-time Emmy Award winner Megan Mullally. Will and Grace co-star Eric McCormick makes a special appearance with Megan at the 5 o'clock performance. Only for tickets, 310-434-3200 or visit thebroadstage.com. Michael, before we chat with Annie, who's our next guest, you have a little review of the Moscow Festival Ballet Company.
I do. I had the pleasure of being invited to see the Moscow Festival Ballet Company at the beautiful, extraordinarily beautiful, actually, I must say, Valley Performing Arts Center, which is a new venue here in Los Angeles as of a couple of years ago. And I must say, honestly, has the most incomparable sound I've ever heard.
Oh, they say it's like the Valley Disney Concert Hall, yeah, I mean, in terms of the acoustics. And it looks like it, too, with all that wood.
It's just extraordinary. And this production, what better on a Valentine's Day evening after having dinner with my guest, to go and see Romeo and Juliet.
Wow. A ballet of Romeo and Juliet.
A ballet of Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. It was fantastic. And
it was the same for Monica and I. We were at the Monster Truck event.
Oh, you were?
And she remembered to bring the sandwiches, and it just moved me. I'm sorry. Continue.
That's okay. No, I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that this lovely, beautiful company of dancers, none of whom spoke a lick of English, I understand. Some of them actually were in the lobby doing a little promotional thing as before the performance started. But Juliet was portrayed by Maria Klujeva, and Romeo by Nurlan Kinabiev. Am I saying that correctly, Paul? Of course,
I don't know. It just sounds to me like you're reading a pile of Scrabble letters.
There you go. I know. But in a wonderful company beyond their magnificence. And I must say that it's the first time I'd seen anything other than a straight-out concert at that venue. And it works beautifully. I mean, the staging, the lighting, the sets that were brought in for this, because it is on tour, this company. They were magnificent. So I urge you, ladies and gentlemen, who live in the San Fernando Valley and those of you in the greater Los Angeles area, take a trip out there to the Valley Performing Arts Center. It truly is an evening that you will long remember. They have a very diversified season, and you can simply look at their online, or look at the season online at Valley Performing Arts Center. Just go on to the internet and type that in. You'll see their site come right up, and you have a multitude of choices to pick from musical. Yeah. You've been in there, Paul.
Yeah, I saw David Sedaris there. Is it Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin? And
yeah, they've got the Pat Metheny Unity Group. They've, very, very diversified. Beautiful theater. Treat yourself to something that's very important, and that is theater, period.
And I love it because I live in Tarzana, and I get on Reseda, and I'm there in 10 minutes.
Yes, and they have a new artistic director that's just coming in from the LA Opera, and we're going to have him on the show.
So. Oh, great.
Yeah,
great. All right. Sounds great. Our next guest. At what point is it appropriate to reveal to someone an essential yet very private personal truth? And once voiced, can you accept its impact? These questions are at the center of the Santa Monica Playhouse premiere of Giving Up Is Hard to Do, based upon her own fascinating story on stage and off. Veteran Broadway, television, and film actress Annie Abbott's one-woman show is a wild ride of emotions. Her irreverent humor and passionate observations reveal an indomitable spirit. This is the coming-of-age tale of a funny woman unstoppable in the face of life's surprises. Her acting credits include Californication, Boston Legal, L.A. Law, X-Files, ER, Mad About You, Golden Girls, if only there were some shows people knew. And award-winning film and TV director Joel Swick of My Big Fat Greek Wedding helms the production. Please welcome a lovely lady, Annie Abbott.
Yeah.
Annie.
Oh, thanks, everyone.
Oh,
how are you?
I'm good.
And thank you for bringing all these people. That was so kind of you,
really.
I'm always curious about the causal event for a one-person show. And what was it for this?
Ah.
Or was there one? Or was it cumulative?
There kind of was. I always understood there was something going on with me.
What does that mean? Be specific.
That's the trick. Be specific. I always felt very attached to myself. To get that explanation out to my voice, I wanted the voice that I understood was me. I needed to find that because I'd written my whole life and I'd written a show before this, but it wasn't the show I wanted to kind of make my signature. And the causal event, I had been dating as a grown-up after I was married for 32 years because I lost my husband. And I took notes because I had to. You don't remember anything. I have notes all in calendars. Had a yellow pad, all my notes, what he said about his kids, what he said about women, what he said about school.
You had notes about your dates.
Yes.
Oh, what now?
Thank you, you see.
For the reason of...
To be able to understand that when someone called me back, you go, oh, God, who is that?
Were you dating that much?
I was just going to say. Well, to be an effective stalker, you really have to.
Really?
Well, for a woman of my age, I heard that. I had met, I'd only been on for about a year, and I met 25 guys. I don't even know what that means. People told me that that was very good for, quotes, older woman.
I would say for anybody.
So anyway. Oh, that's one of the guys I dated. Yeah. Right? So I actually found my voice. I started to write a piece about dating as an older woman. And I went, oh, my God, there's my voice.
Wow.
And I don't know why it came out in that piece, but I went, now I can do it. I understood that I captured what I felt was always me. But when you do other people's work, you take a version of you and you translate that into the body of things or tools that you have.
Right.
When you're writing for yourself, it must be so authentic because no one else could perceive it the way you do.
Well, not only that, but the vulnerability factor is through the roof because, you know, I did a one-person autobiographical one-person show, and someone once described it as an autobiographical one-person show is standing on stage naked and turning around slowly. Because it just, there's nothing between you. There's no filter. And you also have no safety of blaming it on a playwright.
Right.
You know, not blaming or assigning
it. Well, then you share this, Travis, because you're a playwright as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you write anything else as far as a play is concerned before you wrote this?
I did. I wrote another piece about maybe 15 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. But it didn't, for me, it didn't capture what this show captures. This show kind of went all out for all of the things that this is what I say. Theater is about stuff you don't discuss at dinner. It's about stuff you don't bring out because it changes the landscape for the person you're speaking to and for yourself. So you can't recover that easily. So it's about, I wouldn't even use the word secrets. It's almost about things that are unspeakable that can only be sung or painted or presented to the theater. It's theater. It's art. It's not conversation. It's art.
Right.
And that's what I attach to. And that's been thrilling.
So now for the listeners, so they will know to come to see this, can you give sort of an encapsulated synopsis, or would you prefer not to, or is it easy to do a synopsis of it, about what they can expect?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. I asked you four questions.
I know. I'm going to say yes.
To all of them.
Well, I was formed. You're formed by voices and sounds that you don't even know exist. The sounds and the voices were immigrants coming to this country. My older grandmas and grandpas and everything were immigrants, and the sounds, the yearnings, all the things they wanted for us, you could just hear. You could hear how much they wanted for me and my brothers and sisters, and then Jerome Robbins, Leonard Bernstein, because I'm from New York. All the people that were creating that kind of art that was trying to fulfill the hopes of all the immigrants coming over that had come to this country in the hope of. And they took those dreams and kind of, again, it wasn't conversation, it was art. Mm. And I found that those were the voices that really spoke to me, that my grandmother, when she laughed, you couldn't stop her. You almost had to hold her up. Grandma, Grandma, don't fall. I got you. I got you. And when she cried, there were puddles. People, Mom, please stop crying. Mom, please, you're scaring the children. So there was an enormous
a passion in both directions.
Yeah, and that was the thing I identified with. And that was, I felt that in my life, it was that it had to be everything. Everything that was achievable, I had to try for, and that was my job. I felt it in every aspect of my life. But you don't know that when you're going through your life. You only know it when you begin to look back and kind of examine or get to know who you are. You go, wow, it was always
there. How long
there.
Did it take you to write this play?
It took me about a year and a half, which I hear is a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
and I was performing it in workshops and stuff like that. And it was interesting. It got more and more daring as people really encouraged me. And my daughter at one point said, "Mom, there's more there." And I went, "Oh, no." She said, "You have to." And that's some of the funniest parts of the show, yeah. The stuff when she finally said, "Mom, you've told me there's more there." And I went, "Oh, no, don't make me." And she said, "Yeah."
The show is Giving Up Is Hard to Do. This is playing through Sunday, March 2nd. This is at the Santa Monica Playhouse main stage. That's 1211 4th Street in Santa Monica. For tickets, it's brownpapertickets.com, or you can call 800-838-3006 and all the usual discount outlets, Gold Star, etc., and we will throw this information back out there before the end of the hour. And I wanted to ask you something without prying too much. You mentioned earlier that you lost your husband.
Right.
How much of this self-awareness that you have now, this perception that you have of being able to examine yourself, how much of that is born of just not having your husband, not being in a partner relationship? Do you think that that's given you a unique perspective on you, having lost your husband and being by yourself for a while, that you're able to see more of your internal? Because I know there's a lot of married couples I know that I don't even view them as individuals. I view them as halves of a whole.
Right.
You know, how did that flavor it?
Well, I met my husband at 19. We met at Brooklyn College in the theater department. So it did. What I understood was that this time was offered to me. It's the first time as an adult I'd ever been alone. So I took a long time to get involved with any. I didn't even think about dating until 9 years later. And yes, in that space of time, it was very, very critical because I could actually, because my own thoughts, there was a very, very clear pathway. Because for the first time in my life, I wasn't negotiating anyone or anything. It was time for me to be able to dive kind of into myself. And I saw that even how I dated was how I did everything else. I always say how I pick a green apple, a fine green apple, is the same way I work on a script, or there's never, I have a million questions. I examine the apple. I feel the apple. I touch the apple. I have a relationship with the apple. I have a relationship with every moment that I'm in. I have to be inside. So, yes, it was, it had its own usefulness. But I felt that I carried, my husband was Ronnie, I felt that I carried Ronnie with me, that Ronnie and I were so young when we met.
Right.
That I...
This part, just
yeah,
in your bones.
I just carry him with me.
Oh, that's
Annie,
nice.
Do you teach at all? Do you teach acting?
No. Should I?
Yeah.
It's the one thing I've never done. Do you have a job for me?
I don't necessarily, but I think you're an amazingly fascinating woman, and I love your approach to everything that you do and how
it's
you
the
see
one thing
life.
I haven't done.
And I kind of live vicariously.
She is a very fascinating woman. We did a wonderful production of Kvetch a couple of years ago, and she's as interesting a person to work with on stage as off.
And I was working with that production as well, but I didn't have the pleasure of speaking to you
and knowing you
I was doing the publicity, so I was in the background.
Yeah. No, I just want to say, because I'm such a serious person by nature, it's one of the reasons the people I love the most that influenced me in terms of television were Sid Caesar, Imogene Coca, Carl Reiner, all those. That kind of comedy, to me, I always think of it as irreverent, dark comedy. Those were the voices that I identified with, and that's the humor in the show.
I call that smart silly. I call it smart silly, like Python. It's like it can be very silly, but there's such a razor-sharp intellect behind the silliness.
Exactly. You know? So that's the kind of humor. It's very funny. But But they were so serious. It was surgery. It was surgery.
It was precision. Yeah. You know, Travis, I want to ask Travis something very quickly. We mentioned earlier, and Michael mentioned it earlier, that you are a playwright as well. Have you ever had any interest in writing anything autobiographical, or have you?
Absolutely. I'm sort of writing one right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but there is no end in sight. I think I'm not ready to be done with it. Yeah, I'm not ready for it.
Would it be musical themed or just...
So far, it's just spoken. Just, okay. Just, yeah, and play format. But, oh. But yeah, I think it's a huge project that could take me 10 years to finish. But I started last year. Yeah, bit by bit, and just whenever whenever something compels me to pick it up and write a little more than I do.
I'm curious because it's such a different to write a piece of work is one thing. To write an autobiographical piece of work is a completely different animal. So yeah. I'm always curious if authors or writers are bent that way. I interrupted you earlier, Michael. You were going to say
no,
something?
Not at all. I was going to say I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I am. you worked with Paul Strolley. Mm-hmm. I find Paul an amazingly gifted man.
Extraordinary.
He is, the force behind, not the only force, but certainly a magnificent one behind Sea Glass Theater, yeah. Which is a theater company that he's developed with Kimberly Van Leeuwen and some other fine people.
A number of other people,
and
yes.
And everything they do is very, very special. And it's like LA's Next Great Stage Star. You know, I have that same company. I have I've been graced by Barbara Van Orden, who serves as our co-executive producer now. She has been producer with me for the past couple of years, since 2012. And, it takes a village to create the environment that you love, that you're all about, that, you have to find those people. Like,
that's
you have
exactly
found those
right.
people in your life.
Right.
And we all have to find those people. Mm-hmm. I had to find this man, but I didn't know who he was. I had to find 19
exactly.
others like him. I didn't know who they
exactly.
were.
I
had to find Barbara Van Orden. I had to find Peter Welkin, my producer. I had to find James Lent, our musical director. Mm-hmm. And we all work so beautifully together.
Right.
It's why we end up with a good... Mm-hmm. Well, that's why he's sitting here. That's why you're sitting here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no. That's he's extra... Paul Strolley. I think of you as Strolley. Are you Strolley?
No, it's Strolley, but it's actually Strolley.
Well, I'm from New York, so you got that one.
So you just say, hey, you.
It's extraordinary. He's huge Uber. Good. Speaking of Uber. Yeah. Big Uber.
Big Uber.
Big Uber.
It's a BU.
Well, the penicillin cleared it right up. Sorry.
And the Sea Glass was an extraordinary experience.
And you have to come in and read for the next one that we're doing.
Yes, they're getting ready to do their next play.
It's a very role that you're very suited for.
Is there something Travis might
Unfortunately, there is not. No. There is not. There are only two male roles, and he is far too young to play either of them.
Well, thank you.
Oh, right.
Thank you.
But there's it's actually a study of women. It's three generations of women in the same household, a teenager and a woman in her 40s and then a woman in her 60s. And it's a great play. It's called Wake. It's a West Coast premiere by Carrie Krim. I don't want to promote it right now because it'll be August.
Yeah.
But we're talking about other shows anyway. And we're at that time, Michael. We got to ask our guests this. But before we forget, once again, the show we've been talking to Annie about, Giving Up Is Hard to Do, written and performed by Annie Abbott, directed by Joel Zwick, through March 2nd at Santa Monica Playhouse. Tickets, 800-838-3006 or brownpapertickets.com. Travis. Exactly. Got a performance nightmare you can share with us?
Yeah,
we got
just a small one, but I've been thinking about it for a while.
Okay.
I was in high school, and we were doing a district-wide drama festival. It was the first ever of its kind. And there were, 300-something people in this auditorium, and all the different schools of our high school were there. And I had been given a solo to sing. I was a junior. And we learned it the day before. And I had not memorized it. I just could not, for some reason, memorize it. So I get out there, and I'm trying to sing it. And completely train wreck. Just the worst, worst thing. And I walk off stage. Yeah, exactly. That's what it sounded like. And I walk off stage, and the audience is laughing, sort of applauding. I don't know, whatever. I walk off stage, and I say, well, that sucked. And my mic was still on, so everybody heard it. And that was the talk afterwards.
Which probably got you the biggest laugh
probably,
of the night.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Was the great the Anna Maria Alberghetti story, the first one to wear a mic in a Broadway house?
I don't know the story.
She was Maria in West Side Story. Right. She replaced Carol Lawrence, I guess, and they started body mics with her. Went to the restroom at intermission, didn't turn the mic off.
Oh yeah.
You got one for us, Annie?
Yes, Summer Stock, probably 100 years ago. And we were doing, I think, Oklahoma. I was doing, I think, 80 Annie. And we were on wagons. This was in Texas. And so at the end, I'm singing my heart out, singing. Everyone's on stage. We're on wagons. All of a sudden, we're bowing from our wagons, and I start... acknowledging people next to me, and I go, who are these people? Why am I here? It turns out that my wagon moved several feet backstage, and I was standing with people that I didn't ordinarily see in the curtain call, and I went, oh my God, where am I? What happened? And everyone said, didn't you realize it? Your wagon moved several feet back.
So you're bowing into the wings.
Right. I had no idea. I didn't know I moved. That shows you how involved. I mean,
yeah, how engrossed.
How out of it, right, how engrossed. That's, yeah. That's the nicer way to say it.
Right. Just diplomacy.
So
diplomacy.
You were actually bowing to the wings?
Yes, I was bowing like with my back to the
boy.
With
this
my
actress,
ass on the curtain.
This actress wow. is really full of herself. She's bowing to the stagehands. My gosh! Oh, this was so fun. I hope you guys
Absolutely.
Had as much fun
yeah,
as
yeah.
we do. You too had as much fun as we do.
Travis, yeah. thank you for coming in.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate
Michael.
It.
Thank
and
you,
Jennifer Kranz, if you're listening out there, thank you so much.
Yes,
for
lovely
joining
having
us
her
today.
On.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure having both of you on,
thank
and we look
you.
Forward to talking to all of our listeners next week.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley. Right here on LA Talk Radio.